Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 32 on Monday, the 21st of March, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
And this is really, really strange, certainly for me.
It's not exactly wonderful for me either.
No. We actually, for the first time ever, not only are we in the same place at the same time, we've actually got to look at each other whilst we record this tonight. And I've got a funny feeling there's going to be plenty of corpsing on the way through this. So I'm going to apologise, Andrew, now looking you in the eye, for the amount of editing that you're going to have to do by the time we've finished this.
We'll be fine. We'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be good. Anyway, shall we get started? There's actually quite a lot of news this week, but despite the fact that most PR folks seem to be hiding in darkened rooms recovering from Geneva. But in the meantime, we have some feedback.
Yes. Another review and a rating.
Which, of course, you are all doing. Those of you who haven't left a review and a rating yet, you're just poised on the edges of your seats about to click on iTunes and do it, aren't you?
Of course they are, Alan. We know they are.
So, yes. So, thanks to... Gooding Two Shoes. I think we can guess who that is. Richard Gooding. So, thank you again for your review that you left this week. Yep, that's much appreciated, as ever. So, thank you, folks. Thanks, Rich. And, yeah. Cheers. And it is, as I say, it is for any podcast, not just us, for any podcast you listen to. Stuff on YouTube. The best thing you can possibly do is leave a review, like, tick, thumbs up, whatever it is. It does make such a difference to the creators and to the algorithms of those who actually publish the creation, the work as well.
Yep, tis true, tis true. Mm-hmm. Right, should we move on to the news?
Let's move on to some proper real-life news, I think.
Yes. There apparently was a budget. Another one. That's almost like the fourth in a year or something ridiculous.
Well, it was March. It is kind of normal budget time in March.
Yeah, but the way that elections have gone and everything like that has meant that this is about the fourth time we've had such comments and statements and all the rest of it. So we're getting a little bit world-weary of these... changing all the economic fortunes of the country. But there were a few bits that do affect us as the motorists. Mr. Osborne announced, and it's probably the main first one, was that fuel duty is going to remain frozen again. Mm-hmm. Because perhaps the government have seen that when fuel prices come down, we spend our money and therefore get the economy going otherwise.
Yeah, it surprised me, that one, to be honest, because with the drop in oil prices and eventually the drop in pump fuel prices, I was genuinely expecting them to raise the fuel duty or to make some mutterings about accelerators and restarting them and all these kind of things. So that really did surprise me. I mean, the reasoning that you've just put forward is makes perfect sense to me. But yeah, that was a genuine surprise. I was expecting us to get a fair old hammering.
Yeah, but connected to that, a petroleum revenue tax has been, what was being called, effectively abolished. It's a 50% tax reduction, which should bring the figure down to 10%, and allegedly this will have an impact on fuel pump prices, but... Mm-hmm. Where I'm living, I'm yet to see that.
Yeah, they've been creeping up again a wee bit. I noticed that. And you and I both independently commented that we had filled up our respective vehicles just up the road from here because it was it seemed incredibly cheap, even for supermarket prices.
Yes.
And trust me, I've been done this week, 250 Veycross miles. I'm looking for the cheapest fuel possible because goodness knows I need to tow a Bowser around behind me the rate it's going in a minute.
Not so good though for us is that insurance premium tax is to rise by 0.5%. Mm-hmm. Now this is to go to help pay for flood defences.
Yes.
Which seems to make sense for cars, but never mind.
It's, I think we're once again proving why we're not politicians, to be honest.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. Yeah, so there's that. And there's also going to be a whole bunch of investment in infrastructure, which is always something I like. £230 million worth of motorway A and A roads schemes in the north, and that includes the plan for the Trans-Pennine Tunnel between Manchester and Sheffield.
Because it desperately needs a tunnel.
Well, it was a couple of years since I drove the M62, and that was not a very pleasant experience at all.
Yeah, but is there that much traffic for a tunnel? I mean, if they're doing it to stimulate the economy and to push the economies in the northern region, so that people who are employed and therefore they spend money and all that sort of thing, then that's fair enough. You know, that's a known way to help. But if it's to say, well, we're going to make it quicker to travel, then that doesn't really wash for the expense.
No. One of my worries about that, actually, is that certainly in Scotland and further north, there's been a lot of the big civil works and stuff have actually gone to... This is going to sound terribly protectionist, so I apologise now, but have actually gone to companies from outside the UK. And I don't just mean like the arm of a company from outside the UK. I mean the full-fledged... They tend to be full-fledged Irish civil engineering companies are bidding so low for work in the UK at the minute that rather than, certainly for work in Scotland, rather than it being going to any of the large Scottish companies or English companies or even the ones that are actually owned by the French but at least have British names, it is going directly to many of these offshore companies. So I really hope that its investment's meant to boost the economy. I kind of hope it boosts our economy. And I know that sounds terrible. And please don't read any other political statements into that. But yeah. As I say, coming from a family with a haulage and blunt hire company, I keep a keen eye on these kind of things. So yeah. Yep, so generally I think it was a pretty... Oh, there's one more. We'll get in trouble if we don't mention that.
Well, there's two more. First one is...
Uh-huh.
Good news if you want to go into Wales.
Yes. Halved.
From 2018, the Severn Crossing tolls are going to be halved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So £3.30 is your Wales tax. Instead of £6.60 for motorists and, fans and HGVs the same. Motorcycles will continue to be free. So yeah. Which was the other one I missed?
Investment in driverless and connected cars.
Oh, of course. Oh, and that reminds me of something I meant to talk about last week, actually. Because, you know, not last week, the week before, we talked about the connected trucks on the upper reaches of the M6. And if you remember the story, because of course you were listening and paying attention, everyone, they were talking about platoons of trucks moving up and down there. Well, just afterwards, I was looking through some quotations for some new trucks, as one does normally. And I couldn't help but notice in the specs that these things practically drive themselves. I mean, if you're looking at particularly at Scanias and Volvos, but the DAF prices I was looking at as well, there is every safety device going. I mean, the Volvo trucks, I know it's a completely different organization, really, from Volvo cars that we're all familiar with. But the number of safety systems is exactly the same. There's lane departure warning, there's active cruise, there's all the systems that we expect on cars are coming with the sort of upper level of the current trucks as well. There's basically all that's missing is the hive mind, you know.
Ah, well, funny you should mention that.
Uh-oh.
I know you were without comms today, noticed that Daimler had a massive press conference where they were demonstrating live platooning on the Autobahn. That's which cool. Then drove into the warehouse where they were holding their press conference. So that's where when you mentioned platooning, that's where I thought you were going with this. But
no,
Daimler,
was...
today Daimler did that.
Oh, no, I missed
I'll
that
find
completely.
Links to all that and put them in the show notes. But yeah, that was interesting because they were, I think they had them at 80 feet apart, which was the compromise between safety and efficiency that Daimler had come up with.
Yeah, you don't want people slotted in too readily is the problem. Actually, that's the hard bit, is trying to make sure it remains as a platoon. That's quite
and they cool. They were videoing, they're showing live pictures from within the cabs where the drivers were there, but their hands were very much clear from the steering wheel, etc. So
I'm sure there'll be a video up on Mercedes-Benz Roadstar's site before very long, because they're very good at sharing any of these things. So if you are in any way a trucky person, so I'm really looking forward to that. Maybe we'll see what comes out of that. It's too late for today, but we'll
Osborne was talking about for us, or what was mentioned in the documentation, was looking at removing regulatory barriers.
Mm-hmm.
So that autonomous vehicles could be driven on major English roads in the summer of 2016. Mm-hmm. That fills me full of massive amounts of confidence.
You're not heading north on holiday this year, are you?
No, but next year I might.
Okay. Okay. They'll have refined it by then.
Yeah, okay. £15 million connected corridor from London to Dover, which is going to trial car-to-car and car-to-X communications.
It's a strange, strange place to do that. Well, there's so many accidents.
Isn't it just a lorry car park anyway?
Well, yeah. Well, yes, for most of the summer it certainly was.
So, and there's also been announced, this is not connected with connected cars. It's great English. Spot we do a podcast where we use words. But there's going to be an extra $50 million allocated to pothole.
Yes, the Pothole Action Fund, which is a fantastic... Somebody in marketing has been involved with that.
PAF.
It will allow local authorities to fill 1 million potholes.
Really? Mm. I think we've got 1 million just in
our... No, it doesn't. So that's one corner of London anyway.
Yes.
And then a further $130 million has been allocated to fix roads and bridges damaged by Storm Desmond and Storm Eva. I've forgotten which ones those were. It seems to be one long storm this winter.
Cumbria and Scotland, really, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah. I don't know. Oh, yes. I was out of the country. Yes, it was, basically, to fix Cumbria and Scotland.
Right, let's move on.
Good stuff.
Let's move on then.
Yeah.
One you found.
One I found. One that's definitely no government money going towards funding this, I certainly hope, is that there is a part, if, you know, all that money that we're saving on our fuel duty and all of that, if you gather together £350,000 worth, then you could buy a parking space that has been put up for sale in central London. So it's...
Well, I'll just check down the back of the couch. I'm sure I've got the loose change.
Yeah, that's a lot of 2p pieces, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So it's a space in Hyde Park Gardens. It's 19.5 feet by 8 feet, being advertised by Knight Frank, which says it's a rare opportunity to purchase a private parking space for one car located behind the prestigious Hyde Park Gardens and ideally located for transport links of the M1. You don't even own it. I know. Yeah, Hyde Park. It's right at the end of the M1. It's exactly what I think of. You don't even own it. It is for the remainder of an 88-year private lease. £350,000. In case you think that's a little bit steep, what about the second most expensive car parking space for sale in the UK? Well, it's a mere £85,000, but it's not very handy for Hyde Park Gardens because it is in the new town in Edinburgh. So clearly those Edinburghers have too much money. You see?
Right, okay.
I don't want to sound all political, but I wonder how much RBS bonus money will be going on that.
Allegedly,
yes.
Right, let's move on from ridiculousness to some good news.
Excellent.
We said last week when we were discussing new car registrations, we were very happy to see that SEAT took a significant jump, actually, in their year-on-year. and they've announced that they've made a profit for the first time since 2008, which is post-tax €6 million, which is excellent. Because as you know, as you will be regular listeners to the show, that we are fond of SEAT and we are worried post-Dieselgate or mid-Dieselgate, what will happen to them. So any news that shows things like we're making a profit, we're doing well, we're selling more, can only be a good thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it was a €6 million profit on €8.3 billion in revenue. That's its highest figure in its history and twice as much revenue as it brought in 2009, which is pretty impressive. Actually, all the numbers here and all the various percentages are particularly impressive. He says, and then doesn't give any of them.
Well, we are reading SEAT's press release, which is really not very helpful.
So SEAT generated an EBITDA of €400 million and operating cash flow grew by 50%, for those of you of a slightly commercial nature. So some big numbers in here.
And this is all before they come out with their SUV?
Yes, this is before the Etique. Ateca.
I don't know. The SUV.
I don't do Spanish. So it's before
we struggle with English.
I know. God. As you say, you know, let's choose a medium that uses words, and I'll sit here and stutter my way through it. So, this is before the one that seemed to be their big push with the SUV. I just hope it's as successful as the rest of the range, because I've noticed a lot of SEATs around recently. I don't know if it's just because I'm more conscious or what, but it is. I see more of them.
Yeah.
I see from here that, you know, increase in sales and production, 350 new jobs within SEAT, including 100 engineers at the technical center. And 48 graduates and stuff. So good to see them expanding. Really pleased. Good news. Jolly good news.
It is good news. More good news, Alan.
More good news. This week, or earlier this week, Aston Martin and Red Bull have confirmed the rumours that have been going around for a little while. That they have been working on a next generation hypercar project.
Yeah, not even super.
It's not super. It's a hyper duper. it's a duper car. it's a joint Aston Martin and Red Bull project, led supposedly by former F1 aerodynamicist and design supremo Adrian Newey. I mean, he's worked for many of the big teams, notably McLaren, Red Bull. Was it Williams at one point? Possibly, definitely McLaren and Red Bull. With some absolute stunners of cars that were incredibly successful. And this is thought to be his legacy car. So the idea, what's meant by that is it is for Newey what the McLaren F1 was for Gordon Murray whenever he finished up designing F1 cars and decided to, you know, do that one man vision type car.
Yeah.
And I really hope he's in a position to do that, because that to me is still, I mean, we've talked about the Chiron, with the Veyron, all these cars, but what for me, yeah, even the McLaren P1. But for me, the thing that makes the McLaren F1 stand out is it's the one-man vision. Mm. Okay, it's Gordon Murray's vision. I mean, he has one of the late prototype ones that he was given. And he still says the one thing that annoys him about the McLaren F1 is that at one point, I believe it's to hold a boot lamp or something, to light the lights up. Not the boot lamp, the engine bay, if you open the cover at night. Is that there is a bracket on top of a bracket. And that offends him personally. Okay, because it's just not as slick as it should be. And that's just his opinion, you know, and the fact that he specified the Babinga wood gear knob and all these things in the McLaren F1 sort of make it stand out. So what makes it stand out? So I really, really hope that Adrian Newey is being given that autonomy and that ability to make these decisions. And that he wants to make these decisions, of course.
Isn't it supposed to be able to be quick around, was it Silverstone or something, than an F1 car?
I can't remember.
So that sounds like it's going to be significantly quicker than other road-going cars.
I think if they're going to do this, they're going to make a real statement with it. They really will.
We still don't know what it's going to look like.
No,
there's lots of sites with our artist's impression.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Exclusive artist's impression. And I'm sure it won't be a bazillion miles away. Certainly the autocar one reminds me of a slightly curvier, which isn't very difficult, a version of the Bulldog concept car from the early 80s, which I think was Sir William Townes at the start of that, but I could be wrong.
And it's going to be full of tech, isn't it?
It's going to be loaded. It's hybrid system in there. It's unlikely to be solely an internal combustion engine, but I think that is just the way it is now with not just with supercars, but I think that's filtering down to the rest of us.
Yeah, I think just to give it extra power. That's the way they're doing it, aren't they?
That boomf, that surge. They're talking about an F1 Kurs-style setup in there as well. They're also talking about building up to about 99 of them, was it?
Something like that.
It's somewhere in the region of between £2 to £3 million.
Oh, that's perfect for you then to replace the MX-5 when you get bored.
Yeah. As long as it's got as much luggage space, I'll be quite happy with that, yeah. So, yes. It should be interesting. They've confirmed they're doing it, which is why we're talking about it, but actually what it's going to look like, how it's going to perform any of these things, I think just about everything else is speculation from there on in.
Well, it's got to absolutely trump what's existing. So it's got to beat the Porsche, it's got to beat the Ferrari, it's not going to just beat them, because if it's being called a hypercar, next generation hypercar, it's got to absolutely stomp them into the ground.
Yeah.
So expecting very, very fast and, you know, stunning to look at, etc.
I think if it's to make the statement, that I think that Red Bull wants to make with this, it's going to have to blow the others out of the water.
Yeah.
Absolutely blow the others out of the water. So, yeah. So good luck with that. Looking forward to hearing more when more is confirmed.
Yes. Right, let's move on.
Yeah. It is awards season, and
every week we've got another award.
Every week there's another set of awards. Andrew, tell us about this week's set of awards.
Okay, these are the inaugural News Press Awards. Now, News Press are the central hub for motoring journalists, freelancers, and the motoring PR people. And
podcasters, okay? We come clean on this. They are a useful source for us.
Yep.
In there as well.
Yeah, so we are in their database. And so they've decided, because they are so, well, I'd say pretty vital.
They are pretty central.
How information is passed on, that they've got some awards. Now there's quite a few awards. Some of it's for the journalist side of things, some of it's for the PR. So there's a couple here that I'll just pick out as I go through, because we know these people. But classic car writer goes to James Rupert, who is Banganomics.
He is Banganomics, yes. Yes, absolutely. He also writes for Autocar. He writes for other bits and pieces too, and he's written quite a few books.
Is he not in charge of the Free Car magazine?
Yes, that too. He does many, many things. Many, many things. Which is good. All of which I enjoy. I've read his work for quite some time.
Automotive editor goes to, not that we are sponsored by Autocar, but you would think it some weeks, but goes to Jim Holder.
It's the other way around. Nothing I enjoy better than browsing the dead tree edition of Autocar in the smallest rooms. So, yep, always a good shout out for Autocar.
But also, and I'll put a link to this in the show, but Automotive Video goes to Keith Jones with very, very good video review of a Citroen. But they also, like I said, they also celebrate the PR and the manufacturer side of things. Suzuki were voted by the journalist as the best press office. Simon Branney, he of Honda, won best press officer, which I fully endorse. The way that Honda have welcomed, as we've mentioned, Honda have welcomed the show and been open to allowing us to loan a car and visit them and stuff like that. They've been excellent. It's all happened far quicker than we ever anticipated,
yes,
or hoped. yeah, so it's good to see that there's a set of awards here that seem to be celebrating both sides of them, bringing them all together. It's not just, you know, just the cars or just the journalists. So that's good. So look forward to seeing how that goes on next year.
Yep.
And actually seeing if there's a category that we can be entered for, because it doesn't say anything about podcasts. Naughty news press.
Well, I don't think anyone says anything about podcasts.
Well, let's
that we have. Yeah.
Let's see what we can do about that for next year.
Yeah. Well, force their hands.
Yes. So, yeah. Moving on then, Al. Another one you spotted.
Yeah. Toyota. I mean, the New York Auto Show is coming up. We haven't really covered much from it this week. We'll talk about it more next week. But Toyota has shown pictures of its facelifted GT86 ahead of next week's New York Motor Show. I think it's an improvement. I really do. And I've never thought the GT86 was ugly. No. It was a little bit fussy in places, and it's as if someone has gone along and said, well, we're a bit weak that with some of these areas like the grills, front vents and stuff the last time. Let's firm them up a bit. LED headlamps, head and tail lamps, which sounds like a silly thing, but they look really great in the pictures. And they're trying to make the interior a little bit more upmarket as well.
Well, it just looks a little bit more aggressive.
It does, but in a not in an "I'm going to eat your children" type of form of aggression. It just turned it up just a couple of notches on the volume there.
But it does. There are no changes to the engine and stuff. So.
No, same power and stuff. And the wheels still look a little bit small and a little bit inboard, which has always been my. I was saying to Andrew earlier on, anytime you look at a GT86, you look at it, you get the cost, and then you add on the cost of a decent set of wheels and tyres, because I always feel that they look a little bit lost in there, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the GT86. I like it a lot, actually. Yeah. As driven by our Swedish correspondent.
Yes.
Huge amount of GT86. Yeah. Boxer engine too, so it sounds good. Sounds good. Now, Andrew, this weekend I caught a couple of tweets from you whilst I was out and about doing various bits and pieces. And you were watching a little bit of the 74th Goodwood members meeting.
Yeah, not as much as I wanted. That's definitely for sure. Which I may have complained to my family about, allegedly. But yeah, no, it's the start of the season, basically. It's like the revival, but without quite so much of the crowds. There isn't quite so much of it going on. It seems to be a much more relaxed event than, say, Festival of Speed or the revival. But obviously, on the track, the people are not holding back at all, as demonstrated by quite a few accidents this weekend, actually, and. Hopefully, everybody who were involved in those and were injured would recover quickly. But it just goes to show how, if you put the accidents that happened there up against what happened in the F1, and I'm not a big F1 fan, but we've obviously all seen the pictures of what happened to Fernando. It just goes to show how far things have come on
Oh yeah,
safety wise.
Yeah, I mean that was. I missed the Formula One as well. I was actually busy doing car stuff all weekend, which meant that I missed out on some of the car stuff. So yeah, but that was why. Oh gee, I can't even disguise it because he's sitting opposite me, and he's yawned silently about three times so far. I just want to make that heard and known on here. But yes, I saw the aftermath. I've seen some of the pictures of what happened to Fernando Alonso's McLaren, and when you compare that to what happens to some of the cars racing at Goodwood, it's quite phenomenal actually, given the speeds involved. So yes. But yeah, so it's the start of the season really for much of the motor racing between the Formula One and Goodwood.
Yep.
And I was being asked today if I'd booked my Formula E tickets to at least two different races. I'm saying I'm trying to balance everything that's happening. It is. And I'm going to go on about supporting your local circuit. Once again, it's not just about the big events. It's about those small local events that happen at Croft, they happen at Donington, they happen at Castle Coombe, they happen at Rockingham, they happen at Silverstone, Brands Hatch. All these places are stuff all the time. If you're vaguely nearby, go have a look at their website, see what's there. It's often incredibly affordable for a family. It really can make a decent day out. So please thoroughly enjoy the big events, but don't forget the little ones too.
Yep. Right, let's move on, Alan. Another one you spotted.
Yeah, a little bit of a follow-up from last week? I don't know. They all seem to be rolling into one right at the minute.
The week before.
It was the week before. A little bit of a follow-up from there. We were talking about the new Honda Civic and Honda Civic concept that was shown in Geneva. And disguised versions of basically that concept have been spotted testing on UK roads. Which I think bodes well for some of the stuff that you were saying about them, Andrew. Just making sure that they should work in the UK, because many car manufacturers at the minute are saying that, you know, actually, if we go to the UK, we've got a limited distance we have to drive from headquarters, from garages, from all these kind of things, and there's so many different road surfaces of varying and often poor quality that it's well worthwhile. I saw another article in Autocar. No, they don't sponsor us. If you want to sponsor us, drop me a line, alan@motoringpodcast.com. I was so busy putting in the plug, I've forgotten what I was saying. Yes, I was saying that in Autocar there was an article from GM and Opel engineers basically saying the same thing with regard to the new Astra. In their case, just saying, you know, from Luton, if we just test in Bedfordshire, we can cover practically everything that we need to really, really make sure that these cars handle well. Of course, Nissan and Infiniti develop a load of cars at their place near Cranfield in Bedfordshire as well. So, good news. Yes, I was amazed at how big this new Civic is. It looked big, as I think I said, it looked big in Geneva. But it's 140 mil longer than a Ford Focus. That's almost 6 inches.
That's quite large.
Which is quite large. It also makes it 245 mil longer than a Volkswagen Golf. So that's getting on for a foot longer than a Golf.
And they're still keeping a wheel near enough to each corner as well.
It does look like it, but
pretty close.
I mean, if the cabin in that is not absolutely massive,
yeah,
then I'll be quite surprised.
Well, if the current one can deal with my hoard, then that one should happily deal with my hoard.
You'd hope so. And it's a 10th generation Civic. When you look at that, and you look at the size of that compared to the Mark 1 that was in Retro Japanese this month, please feel free to hunt down a copy. Then you just see just how much that car model has grown, has evolved.
It looks so much wider as well.
Yeah, it does. It's only 30 mil wider than the current car, but it's 20 mil lower and 130 mil longer than the current car, not than the Mark 1. It's significantly longer than the Mark 1. It must be about 3 feet longer. But it'll still come. They're talking about three engines, two petrol units, a 1 litre three-cylinder and a 1.5 litre four-cylinder turbo VTEC, yo, and a diesel as well. Yeah, I can't see the number for the diesel. 1.6.
It's the one they've got now. That's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I'm looking forward to that coming out.
It's out and about. Before we round up, there was one last story, which I thought you'd noticed. They're about hiring a Twizy in the Lake District. This one's... You slightly throw me, because this one's marked down for me, and I thought it was marked down for you.
No, I thought I'd keep you on your toes.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's so much easier when we're hundreds of miles apart. A company called the Co-Wheels Car Club is offering not just... I don't even know if they're offering electric cars to rent in the Lake District, but they are renting out a fleet of Twizzies. So, you know, the tiny sort of... is it a... Oh, what's it called when it's smaller than a car? Oh, same class as the awful G-Wiz was. The
so not even a microcar?
A cycle car. That's what it's actually called, okay. I think. Voiturette. The Renault Twizy, anyway, with its two seats in tandem. There, you can rent those, bedecked with wraps to make them look like sort of like sheep, which is really cool. We were talking about this beforehand, and it is really very, very cool. But they're available to rent in the Lake District, which is fantastically cool. I think it's available in Keswick to rent and to use when you're up there. I'm trying to click through, but the hotel internet is letting me down badly.
Well, the locations you can hire from are Keswick and Borrowdale,
mm-hmm.
and then Penrith and Ullswater.
Oh, right. Okay, so there's four. Yeah, absolutely. Ah, they're through now. Yes.
And the cars are called sheep.
Mm.
It's a flock of Twizzies, is what it is.
It's. I think it's really genius. It's a
great
little
thing, and I think it's a great idea to help people get around the Lake District, and anything that helps after the floods and people going up there and visiting this summer,
mm-hmm.
this spring and summer, to help put money back into the communities up there that desperately need it, is a great thing. But I think it's a cracking idea that they've wrapped them up and they've given them their own names mm-hmm. and personalities and stuff.
And don't panic, folks. They do all seem to come with the optional doors and wet weather protection as well. I did check in the photos. But I've actually...
you're in the Lake District. You don't go anywhere without right. having a full coat and wetsuit and snorkel, do you?
So, you book with a Twizy house. The drivers just need to provide a valid driving licence and NI number for inspection before picking up their chosen sheep. £10 an hour, £30 for half a day, which is 4 hours, or £45 for a full hour.
Full day.
A full day. That seems pretty decent to me.
Mm.
I mean... And I've rented odd vehicles in other places as well. So if any of you are in San Francisco, for example, the little three-wheeled go-cars, which have a sat-nav thing, and then they take you around a tour at whatever speed you want, is fantastic and well worth the way of doing it. So I can imagine that these for the Lake District would be just as awesome.
Ding, drink.
Excellent.
Excuse me, I'll cough instead of yawn.
What do you mean, cough after yawn, yeah? So, absolutely genius. Well found, mate. That looks good. That looks well worth investigating for people who are visiting the lakes. And the lakes is absolutely stunning. If you've never been, get yourselves up there, because it really is gorgeous.
Yes, agreed.
Really like it a lot around there.
I think that's about it today.
It is just about it. That seems to have been incredibly quick. It really isn't. Not looking at a little clock counting down this week. It's very strange. that's it for this week. So, as usual, if you'd like to get in touch with us, Andrew, what's the best way of getting in touch with you?
Best way would be via Twitter, where I'm at @crackwindscreen. And if they wanted to get in touch with you personally, Alan?
Personally? Then yes, absolutely. At @AGPBradley on Twitter. Naturally, we have a Twitter handle for the show as well, which is @motoringpodcast. We've got the Instagram, which I'm still plugging away with, because actually I'm really quite enjoying that. So again, feel free to follow us on Instagram @motoringpodcast. It was very original when it came up with all of these. And last but absolutely not least, the hub of all our activities, where you can find out the best ways to subscribe, download the show. You can actually now see a gallery of all our Instagram pictures so far, if you're not on Instagram. Then go to that central hub, which is motoringpodcast.com. You can also get blog posts, videos, and I have a funny feeling there'll be at least something up by the end of the week, new that's up there. And all our previous episodes, you can search for them. You can search for them by topic, by keyword, all sorts of stuff are all available on the website as well. Last but not least, as I said at the start of the show, and I'm not really going to apologise for saying it loads and loads of times, if you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating on the internet. Everybody is very, very good at telling people what they don't like. We're not very good at telling people what we do like. And really, for those of us who are podcasting, who are producing content, very often the best thing you can do is actually to just take those 15, 20 seconds of your time, if you've enjoyed what we're producing, and just give us a like, give us a rating, say 3 or 4 words just to say really enjoy this, on whatever medium it is that you enjoy that. So if it's on YouTube, if it's on iTunes, even if it's on our own website, to be perfectly honest, because we have Discus, we have comments enabled on there as well. So if you could do that, that would be hugely, hugely, hugely appreciated. If you don't have an iDevice and you can't leave ratings on iTunes, then go mug a friend who has one. Leave a rating from their device. That works just as well. And if you accidentally subscribe them, then we're not going to tell them, are we?
No.
So, finishing up. I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And until next time, safe motoring.